Shop the Sherwin-Williams sale and get 30% off Duration, Woodscapes, and SuperDeck products May 1st through the 11th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
It's a slightly different Friday show for the Anfield Rap because there's no Liverpool game this weekend. It is the fifth round of the FA Cup and there is no Liverpool game. And the reason why, the person who's responsible is Richard. Not necessarily him, but he represents Wolverhampton Wanderers who dumped unceremoniously Liverpool out of the fourth round of the FA Cup. I think we're all just about over it by now. Beating Spurs has helped Mo.
It has helped a little bit. Also the fact that I haven't seen repeats of the game since it happened.
Never watched them back. Got Mo Stewart with me and Richard Hobbs here from Wolves Fancaston. Richard.
Hi, how's
it going? It's another weekend, another opportunity to get a big win, but things haven't been great, have they, in the intermediate period between the fourth and the fifth round for Wolves?
Yeah, I mean, it's been one of those where, you know, we won and we've kind of gone downwards, whereas Liverpool have lost and have sort of done well kind of since beating Tottenham. We played Barnsley, 3 days after a cup game and beat Barnsley away from home, which was great, and then we managed to lose three on the trot to Burton, Wigan and Newcastle. So yeah, it's not been all sunshine since we beat you guys.
Is that the distraction, in inverted commas, or is that just a load of nonsense? Is it just footballers not being very good at football? I mean, being fair, there have been tight results. You know, it's been one goal against Burton, one goal against Newcastle and one goal against Wigan. There have been tight results, but they have also been two home games in there, and Burton are a side you should be beating, if we're honest.
Yes, yeah, same with Wigan. I think the Newcastle game we can kind of take out because, you know, they're going for promotion, they're clearly a very good side, and we're odds on to lose that game. The Burton one was almost a bit of a come down after beating Liverpool and Barnsley, and clearly like the adrenaline and the motivation had worn off of that one. And then I think on Tuesday too many of the players just had their eye on this weekend's game, but you can never excuse it, can you? You know, it's not like we've got a big enough squad to get away with it, really.
I think the key thing for me, Richard, when I watched the Newcastle game, and I have to say you guys were a little bit unlucky. I mean, not just the guy who scored the goal shouldn't have still been on the pitch. I think there wasn't a lot of chances either way, so it could quite easily have been a score draw against a good side. But it's like you say, it's the performances against the teams you're expecting to beat, those were the more disappointing ones.
No, definitely. I think the Newcastle game, I mean, I was there the game. But I mean, I can't imagine it being a particularly great watch on TV, to be honest.
I only had one eye on it because the Liverpool game was on at the same time, I have to confess.
Oh yeah, of course. You know, it was a scrappy old affair. To be honest, I think Hakimi had one shot on target against him, which was the goal they scored, and to be honest, I don't even remember Wolves having a clear chance all game. So it's disappointing, but you're right. It's the games against the likes of Burton and Wigan who we need to be getting points against, because those two games have kind of sucked us into a bit of a relegation battle now, really.
Well, that's what I was about to say to you, really, is that, you know, it's, the Championship is this mad league, but I think last time we spoke prior to the game at Anfield, there was the feeling of, well, you know, you could go either way. You could push on and have a little look if you can finish top 10, and maybe if you get a bit of momentum up, look at the top 6. Or you can get pulled the opposite direction, and it is now emphatically the opposite direction. Both Wigan and Blackburn are now only 6 points behind. There's 15 games to go. You've got QPR and are bouncing round you. Bristol City are bouncing round you. Forest are having a bad time of it as well. And Villa looked like they were going to get going, but haven't. It does seem, though, you know, from sort of Villa down, anyone can still get sucked in, certainly whilst Burton and Wigan are getting wins.
No, exactly. And it's one of those where the gap between sort of 10th and 16th. Ridiculous. I mean, it's not helped by the fact we've lost a couple of games in a row, but if we win sort of the next two games, it kind of propels you up past 40 points. You're looking at a sort of a safe position with sort of 10 games to go, and we've kind of just got hope that there's, you know, more from a orbit down right now, but, you know, the likes of Blackburn and Wigan are only 6 points behind, and it's getting a little bit tetchy at the moment, I guess.
You've got
a win on the board, to be honest.
Well, you've got two homes coming up after Chelsea. We'll talk about Chelsea in a second, but you've got two homes coming up after. You've got three consecutive home games now. You've got Chelsea, then you've got Birmingham at home on Friday, and then a week on Friday, sorry, and then on Tuesday the 28th, which is a nice gap. You've got Huddersfield at home now. Neither of those two sides are mugs. Birmingham are already at 40 points, and Huddersfield are obviously in third place there, Richard. But you do sort of think, well, win one of them, and it'll take the pressure off.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we beat Birmingham, local derby as well, yep. So, you know, stakes are relatively high. And, you know, Birmingham are sort of only at the top of that sort of quite close middle table sort of part. And actually, it draws them nearer to us than anything else, I guess.
Yeah.
I can imagine that being a game that Lambert would have targeted ahead of time, because like you say, not only is it the local derby, which can add a lot of weight in terms of the performance and feel-good factor, but Birmingham do not look like a side who know how they're playing at the moment. So nothing is implemented seems to have stuck so far, so they look kind of ripe for the taking. The thing I worry about, Richard, is do you feel like some of the players are feeling a little bit like, well, we will get going eventually, there's enough games, there's enough teams below us to be able to ride out a bad period? And because I mean, if you think about the last two games, it's only really two set pieces against Newcastle and Wigan that were the difference between 2 points and 0 points, so it's not really that far away.
No, exactly, and I think you at some level you've got to have that mindset that okay, it's one game or it's a couple of games where we might not have had the luck, or you know, we've not kind of done it in the final third and we've conceded a sloppy goal. But at the same time, it's at what point does a little bit of a spell become a run? And momentum breeds momentum. You see it in football teams all the time, and if you can't get back going again, it starts to get worrisome.
Well, exactly. Providing you lose at Chelsea, it's 5 defeats and 6. So then if the Birmingham result then doesn't go your way, then panic really can start to set in.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the Chelsea game will be interesting, just to see sort of the levels of, you know, how the Wolves players can't perform. I mean, I wasn't particularly optimistic before the Liverpool game, but it turned out that actually we kind of turned it on the day, and we kind of exploited what needed to be exploited about from Liverpool at that time. Probably no one really knows how to exploit Chelsea at the moment.
Well, I mean, that is one of the interesting things about the game, is that if it did feel as though Lampard had a real plan, and he's a, you know, he's very good at his job, Paul Lambert. I think, you know, there's enough of a body of work to say that he's a good manager. He at times may not have had the luck, and at times it may not always come for him, but that's fine, that's the nature of football. This Chelsea one coming up, I mean, do you expect them to go with a very, very similar side to the one that played at Anfield? You know, Costa in there, who was probably man of the match at Anfield, if we're all honest about it. Wyman has a good game. He's not necessarily been on the team sheet regularly against in the Championship. Just, do you think he'll go very, very similar to what he did against Liverpool, or do you think he'll shake it up?
I can imagine he'll probably almost pick an identical lineup, bar maybe a couple of changes in defence and obviously goalkeeper. Costa's assumed to start because he's clearly our best player. It almost doesn't matter who we pick up from, because neither of our strikers are scoring. And the midfield's a bit patchy of late, so I think he might just revert to the same outfield team we played against yourself, in sort of a vain hope that they can raise up the performance again.
I noticed one of the things Lambert said after the Wigan game was that there was a real lack of tempo about the players. So that to me sounds like he might be favouring Wyman over Bodvarsson, because obviously speed in attack is one of the things that really helped you at Anfield. And if, as expected, John Terry and Kurt Zouma come in after a long periods out, a bit of pace up against them, that could be the perfect plan for you.
No, definitely. I mean, if there's sort of the likelihood for someone like John Terry to play in a back three in Chelsea's case, the one area you want to sort of get is to try and expose him sort of down the channel. And there is pace in the team, but Bodvarsson's deceptively quick, as sort of Liverpool found out, even though Yeah. He's a bit of a target man. Dicko's got that pace over 10 yards you kind of need. And Helder Costa and Vine on the wings have got the pace as well. Our problem is with the tempo is actually we don't have the quality through the spine of the team from the midfield particularly to actually keep the ball and actually make sure we're executing that speed correctly and actually making sure the ball's going out to the flanks in a position where they can actually get a bit of movement from it. Either the ball's too slow at the back and the wingers are having to come far too deep to receive the ball, or they're trying to do it too quickly and it becomes route one and the strike's isolated, and we're struggling to find that sort of medium moment someone who can get their foot on the ball and get their head up a bit more, I guess.
Okay, give me a prediction, come on. You going to do it again?
I'll go 3-1 Chelsea.
Okay, feels a kick in the teeth really from my point of view of trying to build, you know, don't pull the house of cards around me here, Richard. Excellent stuff there from Richard. We'll shift over now, we're going to speak to George Dugdale about Oxford. Richard there predicting a defeat for Wolverhampton Wanderers, Mo. George Dugdale's joining us now. I reckon he's going to say that Oxford are going to win. Are you going to beat Borough, George?
Do.
George, you're going to beat Borough?
Of course we are.
There we go. That's what we like to hear.
It's what we wanted. Very much what we wanted. We'll come on to, well, tell us why. I mean, you know, it's still this weird little bit of inconsistency around Oxford this season. You know, you're not in danger of doing anything like finishing 21st or anything like that, George. And you're only 7 points off the playoffs. But it's been a season where for one reason or another, Appleton can't quite just sort of get them going consistently, and there's good halves. I see that there's good halves. I see on your Twitter that there's good halves of football. There was one against Southend, but getting punished at the back end of them.
Yeah, the problem with Southend is that fundamentally we always lose to them and they're massive, and these are two things that we really struggle with. If the AFC Wimbledons and the Southends of this world are a massive problem for us because they're direct and they're strong and they battle, and it's horrible. And when we come up against the kind of the footballing sides in League One, it's a lot easier for us, and that's when we start to build runs. So I think our runs are dictated by what the fixture calendar's got in for us. So we'd won 5 on the bounce before Tuesday, and then Phil Brown turned up and did Phil Brown things, and we found it really difficult.
I mean, you got the win against MK Dons, you got the win against Swindon, and you're right to say that just sort of powers you up there. And you know, the EFL Trophy, which we'll come on to talk about in a minute, the game against Newcastle in the fourth round where you dismantled them 3-0 after they made a few changes, and before then you'd done Rochdale 4-0. So you're right to say it's a footballing side, isn't it? It's a side that plays the game, that wants to get it down, that wants to knock it around.
Yeah, exactly, and MK Dons and Swindon are two really good examples of that. Those are teams that try to play. They try and play out from the back, and they let us press, and they let us nick the ball high, and that's when we're really good. And similar in the Rochdale game, we caught them out playing out from their own final third, and that was where we were lethal. And when teams are launching it from the back, I think they probably watch us, and they're aware that we're a real threat if you're playing around at the back and you're liable to make errors. Because at this level, players do make errors. They're not... This isn't, I was going to say Barcelona playing out from the back, but
it's bad week for that one.
Not Bayern Munich playing out from the back. These are League One players who make mistakes. So I think teams are wary of what we try and do to them. And it's, like I say, it's these teams that play. So I'm quite confident going to a Middlesbrough because they're going to play proper football and they'll try and take us on in a football match. And our players will enjoy it. And I think they're really... enjoyed the challenge of going there and trying to ruin their day.
Because that's an interesting point for me, because Middlesbrough of the Premier League teams are the kind of who have the ability to go direct, and they haven't exactly been as fluid as like Newcastle, for example. But with them being at home in a game that they in theory should be winning, you expect them, the crowd, to take them up and they'll try to do it. So the fact that they're not used to being on the front foot and they're going to have to do it, I really think that plays into your hands in this one.
Yeah, the thing that's given me a lot of hope with Middlesbrough is that they don't score goals, and they've got players who can score goals. And I've just read an article where they say that Rudy Justed might start up front, which is kind of the worst thing that could happen, because that's, you're more talented than a League One footballer, but he's got the build of a League One striker and the kind of League One striker I don't enjoy playing against. So that's a bit of a worry. I'd be much happier if you saw Patrick Bamford up front, for example. A little lad trying to run in behind, because we can deal with those all day. So when your football team that doesn't win many games, they beat Accrington and they beat Sheffield Wednesday in the cup, they've not won since I think December. in other competitions. If you've not got that winning habit, coming up against a team who are going to turn up and, I know we lost on Tuesday, but we're confident and they've got an awful lot to say about themselves, this Oxford team. They kind of, they stroll onto the pitch and they think that they're the business. And if we start popping the ball around and they're, it's not quite what they're expecting, then I think maybe the crowd will get a bit edgy. And they beat Accrington 1-0, and with all due respect to Accrington, they're not Oxford. So it's going to be a really interesting first 20, I think, to set the tone of the game if we can frustrate them and get the backs up a bit.
It, I mean, it is a difficult one for the Middlesbrough manager, George. You know, you're right to point that out. It'd be intriguing if you start Gusted, but in general, you know, it's they're now in a relegation battle. It can't be you know, there's no other way they can move on this. They're in one, and so to come up against you at this time, you're right to say that the one thing you need to do is you need to keep the crowd on side. I've got no idea how big the crowd will be at Middlesbrough for the game, but he needs to be keep the crowd on side. One way you do that is not to be shown up by a League One side, but conversely, it's sort of in his interest to let the League One side have the ball and look to target them. And that's, you know, it's a tough situation for a manager, isn't it? When he's under pressure, he doesn't want to be outplayed. There's possibly the smartest way to win the game is to see possession to Oxford, go direct and go fast against them. But if he does that, then, and it doesn't work, then he's going to be in for huge criticism.
Exactly. I think if you're seen to be lowering your level, as I think is how the Middlesbrough fans would perceive it, and it's worth saying they had over 20,000 there for the Accrington game, so it'll be similar numbers again. So it's not kind of one man and his dog rattling around in a stadium. It'll have a little bit of atmosphere to it, and we'll travel well because we always do. I think they've got a really difficult decision to make. Is do we go full strength and try and get some confidence into our Premier League players? But they are on the floor at the moment, and the way the league's going, they're the team on the slide, and the lads at the bottom, the Swanseas and the Holes, they're at least showing some signs of picking up points here and there. And I think when you've got this the negative momentum that Middlesbrough have got,
no win in eight in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be tempted to go with my Premier League team and try and play some confidence into them. On the flip side, if then that backfires against a League One side, and obviously I think Oxford are the best thing in the world, but as a Premier League player, if you're getting beaten by Oxford, you're not going to see it from my point of view. that could wreck their heads, and that could do them for the rest of the season. So. Right.
Very much so.
Also, the manager can't afford to be knocked out of the FA Cup. They could probably do without the FA Cup, looking at how the league is, but they're also, if they win this, they're one game away from a Wembley semi-final, and as a club like Middlesbrough, that's still a really significant thing. So he's got some tough decisions to make.
I think most people in Middlesbrough will remember the last time they were near relegation and on an FA Cup run as well, so that might come into play as well. I think the interesting thing though is what you said about going full strength, because essentially my initial thought was that he would go because he did, the last thing he wants is a replay. But then I'm looking at your fixtures and yeah, I mean, you're in the middle of, I think it's 9 games in 25 days or something, because you've got the semi-finals of the FL Trophy, you've got this, and you've got a general League One system, which means that you could play in Saturday, Tuesday most weeks anyway. So, yep. I mean, from your perspective, if it is, say, tied 15 minutes to go, are you expecting Appleton to throw everything at it? Or
he will do absolutely everything he can to not have a replay, because it's the one thing that we're on this little charge towards the playoffs that took a stumble on Tuesday, but the one thing that I think might kill us is the fact that we're doing Saturday, Tuesday for the next month, and a replay, I think if it's a draw, we lose the Checker Trade semi-final, and that gets put back to another Tuesday later on in the season. It just becomes really messy. So I know it would be good for the finances to have a replay, but in pure footballing terms, and he described the Southend game on Tuesday as 10 times more important than Middlesbrough.
Right.
So I think that gives you an idea of
definitely
what he might do if we're coming into that stage of the game.
And I think it's fascinating. It's fascinating as well with the Checker Trade Trophy. We talked about it before, George. It seems that you're going to get a final that it should be of the EFL Trophy, which is good to see that the under-21s haven't made it through, haven't limped through one way or the other. But it's still another distraction that just sits there in the calendar at the minute, and would probably still be something that there again, you know, the manager to some degree could do without.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Checker Trade is, as a supporter, it's the absolute worst thing. And I remember hearing Gibbo say on one of your shows that essentially it's another case of the big boys having what they want and the little boys having to battle against this, which kind of seems to happen an awful lot in football at the moment. So I'm on board with Gibbo's opinion that it's a dreadful concept for a tournament, and there's a big meeting today about it, the EFL meeting. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of this tournament for next year. And I am glad as a fan that there's no under 23 sides in it, because I think it could have been a farce playing at Wembley.
Definitely.
With like people going to a final not really being that fussed if they win is the worst concept for me as a football fan. I want, if I'm going to go to Wembley and lose a final, I want the other end to be bouncing. I want it to be the best day of their life and me to feel horrible. And I don't know if I could if it was Swansea under 23s, for example. But then on the flip side with this, the players are absolutely desperate to go to Wembley. We did it last year, but a lot of that side have moved on, and there's a lot of new lads who haven't played at Wembley, and you remember that on a human level they're absolutely desperate to get there. So we're not turning up to the games, but I've kind of taken a new stance as opposed to wanting to be out of it as early as possible. And now if they get to Wembley and have a lovely day, there's a great set of lads that have given me a lot of fun over the last 18 months, then fair play. But it's a really strange concept of a tournament, and it's kind of split fan bases across the country. It's really difficult.
On the charge towards the playoffs, before we just circle back around to the cup, it's there, isn't it? I mean, there's the games in hand. I think that's worth pointing out, that if Oxford can find a way to get themselves on a little bit of a run, there isn't a lot of nightmarish games to come. The Sheffield United still to play at home, but it isn't as though you've got absolutely everybody left who's above you. There's a run in them, is what I'm driving at here. There's a run in them. Do you think they're going to have the legs for it, or do you think it's just going to be an Oxford the side to watch for League One next season?
I think next year 100% will be there or thereabouts. I think the plan is to keep, it's always the plan, but the plan is, and there's a belief that we can do it, is keep the core of this squad together, because it's a young squad. It's a team that we always said would start slowly and grow in the second half of the season, and that's what they're doing. They've learned to play with each other. They know what each other's strengths are, and that little run of five games in all competitions that we won, we were pretty much convincing in all of them, which I think bodes really well for, if not, I think we might have left ourselves a bit too much to do just with the workload and fighting on so many fronts between now and the end of the season. But if we miss out on the playoffs by two spots, I think we'll be right in the mix next season, as long as everybody, manager, key staff, stay together.
Is that also with Europe in mind, as you'll have won the FA Cup?
You say this as a joke.
No, I actually partly don't.
I've been looking at some dates and how we do this if we get there. So, there's a way with the FA Cup and the way it works out that if the right teams progress, we're not ruling this out. So Oxford on tour would be a wonderful thing.
Fantastic. That would definitely keep the squad together.
it's a massive game, I think, for the Middlesbrough game. I understand the manager in terms of he wants to keep the squad focused. But in all seriousness there, you know, there's three or four sides knocking around, I think, in the last 16 who should be looking, George, at thinking to themselves, well, this is a massive chance to get into the last eight. And then because there's three or four of them, if they all get into the last eight, then there's every chance of getting a nice draw. And then you go from there. And George, that's what I'm looking at. I actually think there's every chance that Oxford play at Wembley this year is sort of what I'm driving at. There's no reason not to think right now Oxford United couldn't make the semi-finals of this tournament.
It's really difficult to say it as a fan without people thinking you're nuts. But you were looking at the draw before this Middlesbrough game came out, and you're thinking, say we got Sutton or Lincoln at home, you'd fancy yourselves to win that, and then you could theoretically get Millwall next round, and you're then the favourite in two games that take you to Wembley. And the draw's not panned out like that. But on the flip side, if you beat Middlesbrough, who are in a bad place, and it's going to be very difficult but are beatable, you're absolutely right that you can. I think we fancy ourselves against the vast majority, aside from the top five sides left in it. I think you fancy yourselves at home to have a sniff against any of them, and I fancy Millwall to go through this weekend, and if you get a League One quarter final of the FA Cup, then
that would be fantastic.
One of you is going to do it. So
I don't know. I'm tempted to say that Leicester would probably be an easier game than Millwall for yourselves at the moment.
it's been a mad FA Cup this season, but I think it's a really enjoyable one, especially for those of us that support clubs that don't always have this level of attention. I saw a picture of our press conference earlier today, and it's normally one journo and a notepad, and there's lines of cameras at the training ground for Oxford United. So it's a good time to be a fan, and look, we'll go there and we'll have a good time, and hopefully we can surprise people once again.
Okay, always great to get George on. And now we'll find out from Natasha Henry about one of those big sides, what Arsenal are up to. It won't be good. Joined now by Natasha Henry. And Natasha, it's this game on Monday night, we'll come on to it in a second. It's now become a an unpleasant one for Arsenal in that obviously the vibe, although it doesn't help that they're being sponsored by the Sun, the vibe around Sutton is that people like to see them do all right against Arsenal. And Arsenal, it's going to be a tough game for them because Sutton are going to work really, really hard. They probably get a win, but no one really cares. Everyone just cares about getting beaten 5-1 in Bayern Munich, and it was a bit of a falling apart there second half.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing as an Arsenal fan, I was watching it, and the fact that we came back to 1-0, I was like, okay, if we can keep that away goal and maybe only concede one more, we have a chance when they come to the Emirates. I think it was just the complete, like, three goals in 12, 14 minutes or something ridiculous like that. It was just the complete and utter capitulation, like, just drop their keys down the drain. And first and foremost, I feel really sorry for Wenger. I feel like there's some players on that team that have took the mickey out of him. And I think he looked embarrassed last night. And you've seen him look annoyed, you've seen him look disheartened, confused, but he looked embarrassed. And I think that's a really sad thing for the club and for him.
I think it's funny, Natasha, because we were just saying before we came on air that we were actually thinking maybe that it wouldn't happen this year. Maybe there was enough green shoots to suggest that they could overcome it. But the fact that it didn't and it happened again, like you say, it really looked like it broke him.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this season's been hard for him, and you can see, like, he goes from completely miserable to really, really happy. But you understand that, that's football. We've all watched football long enough to know how that works. But I think at the same point, you know, this season there should be enough in the team. Mm. You know, last season we didn't win the league and we should have done. We got away with not winning the league. But there should be enough in this team that we went to Bayern last night and we didn't concede five goals. Even if we'd lost 2-1, we could have coped because they're Bayern Munich. But the five goals is just embarrassing, isn't it?
Well, I mean, Napoli are a good example because obviously they were under the cosher away at Real Madrid. They kept it to 3-1. They've still got a chance in their second leg. But I don't know, I felt like once the third and fourth goals were going in, that you didn't really see from Arsenal that they were thinking, oh, well, we need to score a second goal to stay in it. They were already thinking, this is over, this is going to be terrible. We're already seeing the headlines, so to speak.
I think, I mean, obviously, Koscielny going off is key, but it shouldn't just be about one player to make you think you need to do this or you can do this. You know, these are seasoned professionals. It's not like you've got a team where, I could even say Liverpool, where so many of your players are under the age of 23, 25 and maybe don't have the number of league games that Arsenal have. I mean, in terms of quality, obviously replacing Koscielny with Gabriel is never going to end up well.
No.
But it was just a simple, that's what always annoys me, it's a simple thing. If you can't do the simple thing well, then there's no hope of doing the big thing well.
There was the chances just before the break, Natasha, and that's where, you know, if Arsenal get in there at 2-1, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Because you're right to point out that, you know, I think you were pointing out last night on Twitter that, for instance, if Koscielny doesn't come off and Arsenal get away with a 2-1 or take one of those chances before the break, then everyone's saying, hasn't the manager done well? And there is this, in general, I mean, you can talk about the culture that a manager sets up around the place and you can talk about the fact that he is ultimately responsible. But every now and again, there has to be a conversation around, well, the lads on the pitch there, as you said at the start, they've let him down. Now, it might well end up being Wenger's last season. If that was the case, I would probably argue that's for the best, Natasha. But there is the thing there of, well, what about the lads on the pitch here? What have they done and how have they got themselves together to get through this? Because there's an amount he can do once they've crossed that white line, but there isn't tons.
No, I completely agree with you. And I've always been a big believer in, like, when managers get sacked, especially ones who have been with clubs for a while, so the players know them. And people are like, oh, the manager. And I'm like, but what about the players? Jose Mourinho is a prime example of that, especially because we see how good they are this season. His team stops playing for him. As much as, obviously, he annoyed them enough for them to down tools, they gave up. They didn't care about the club or about their own careers. They were like, we just want rid of him. And I think that's one of the downfalls in football is that we do always put the blame on the manager or the board. And we forget the fact that they're not the ones running around for 90, 120 minutes. They're not the ones that can really make the difference. They can give you the tools and the ingredients, but if you can't cook the food, It doesn't make no difference, does it?
Very much so. I think it's interesting you've mentioned Mourinho and the Chelsea situation, because I'd say the difference between Arsenal and Chelsea in that respect is that Arsenal players know that Wenger has ultimate authority. He's been there longer than they have, so they're not going to be able to get him out. I think where it comes into it, though, is where they're not fearing the repercussions of not doing enough, because he's kind of let them get away with it for so long that they're not quite thinking, well, if I don't run a little bit harder, if I don't put that tackle in, if I allow Iron Robin to do what he's been doing for 15 years and cut inside and put one in the top corner, then I'm still going to likely be around next year.
Yeah, I mean, I put on Twitter this morning, I do feel they've taken his kindness for a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, hopefully, when the dust has settled, that'll say more about them than it does him. Because I think a lot of them, like Theo Walcott's prime example, he's been very vocal this season. After every game, he's had something to say.
Mm-hmm.
This is when he needs to come out and be vocal. When you're getting slated on social media, when your boss is getting spoken about in the way that he is, this is when you need to stand up and be a man and come out and say something. Not when you've just won 3-0 over Burnley or whatever it was. Because to me, it's when things are bad that you really see people's true colours. And I know they're footballers and people are like, why are you that bothered? But it's any job. If you work in a supermarket and you don't do your job properly, you don't get to keep it. And you definitely don't get a bonus at the end of the year either.
There's the next part of this is, Natasha, before we look forward, I sometimes feel sorry in the opposite direction. I feel sorry is the wrong word, because they've got the win and all that sort of stuff. But I think it happens obviously more when it's an English side playing in Europe. But it's worth pointing out that Bayern Munich were really, really good there for a period of time last night. That they were really, really, really good. That it's not just the idea of that I think they sent a blood, and I think they sent a blood when Koscielny went off injured. But
without a doubt.
But they very, very much decided to go and take that game away from Arsenal.
That's you being silly, because the Premier League is the best league in the world. Of course it's not. You know, don't get me wrong, it may be the most entertaining, and the club in 20th can beat the club in third, and I'll give it that. But it always makes me laugh that when we do get beaten, not just us, but any English side abroad, we don't give the credit to the other team.
Mm.
It's always about how rubbish Arsenal were or how rubbish Liverpool or Man U were. Rather than saying Bayern saw Koscielny go off, they knew he was our strength. He was, and Gabriel was going to be the weak link. And they were like, "Well, let's see how many goals we can get."
Yeah. I mean, there's a point about the sort of 3 minutes after he's on with. I think the first thing Gabriel does is he just gets in front of Lewandowski on something. Only just gets in front of him, and it was as though Bayern were going, "This is what we're going to do.
We're
just going to do this now for the next 20 minutes, and we're just going to see what happens here. And we're going to keep We're going to keep prodding this until it collapses."
You're a shark, and you smell blood. What do? You don't sit and wait.
No,
you go for your prey. And full credit to them, you know. You can't fault their performance. And I think that's probably why I personally didn't comment on their performance, because they did exactly what I expected them to do. 100%. I just couldn't believe how easy we made it for them.
I mean, the next time Koscielny is looking for a new contract, his agent just put in the tape of the 10 minutes after he goes off and just won't leave the room. That's all he needs to do. But you're right, and as much as Bayern Munich did what we expected them to do, they were clinical, they saw their opportunity, they took it. Now, the thing why sometimes Arsenal don't get, or we kind of go over the top on them sometimes, is that they've been in this competition long enough and seen how it works to be able to think that they should be the ones able to do that to other people. Not necessarily withstand it when it happens to them, but take advantage. Because the last 5 minutes of the first half, Bayern were a little bit all over the place.
And I could see us scoring in the first 10 minutes of the second half if things carried on as
exactly.
They were.
And it was almost like half-time came at a bad time, because Arsenal would really... They could start to frustrate some of the Bayern players, because Iwobi was doing a good job of doubling up eventually on Robin, and they weren't getting into the positions they were hoping to get into. But if they could have just held off just a little bit longer.
But we're Arsenal, that's what we do. I'm sorry, it's true. It's like if there's a plug to stand on, we'll stand on it.
This is where though, Natasha, just to get you know, the idea that I think the general vibe is the idea that there could be a post Wenger era here. But this is where I'm very intrigued as to what a post-Wenger era looks like, because the way in which you've just said, this is Arsenal, this is what we do, well, you know, there's a certain mentality that Wenger's both instilled in Arsenal and also has to take ultimate responsibility for. On the positive side, what's been instilled is this idea that Arsenal, you know, and I'd still finish top four, they know how to beat the weaker sides, they know how to do all of this. The other side...
I mean, I remember when we finished ninth and we had Bruce Rioch as manager and we only ever won 1-0 and we would score a goal in the 5th minute and shot for 8 minutes. And I think... But at the same point, Wenger's been manager for over half of my life.
It's crazy.
So man, I can understand there's a lot of people that don't know any different.
So, what does it look like? I mean, that's the key thing. That's what intrigues me is that, you know, you look at the issues that United have had post-Ferguson, that they're only beginning now to look like they're the other side of, that there's these players and that, yeah, for a few of them, you know, a kick up the arse might be a good thing, but conversely, there might be a few suddenly, with the loss of the comfort blankets of Wenger, are suddenly finding, you know, Middlesbrough at home a far tougher proposition than it was. I know you drew against them this season, but...
I genuinely don't know what it looks like because it depends who we bring in. If you bring in someone like a Spinione, he's, you know, the antithesis of Wenger. He's going to be screaming and shouting in your face, whether you just get out the shower or not. You know, he's not going to care who hears and sees. But he's got such a different manner. But then you look at someone like Carlo Ancelotti, who is as clinical, but is a lot calmer. So I think, for me personally, I think someone like Ancelotti would be good because it wouldn't be such a leap.
Yeah.
I think the problem with the
Man U, you can't jump from one to the other so quickly.
No, I think you're right. I think the problem with the Simeone kind of character is if it goes wrong. If he goes in there, lights fires wherever he goes, and they don't do well, and he's out 18 months later, then you've got an even bigger mess. I think you're right. Someone who's able to potentially bridge a gap, so there's still a little bit of continuity in style in terms of how you look to play the game, but there's just a little few tweaks here, a bit more steel added. I think that's probably a better solution. But the question is that after so many years of anger and after such a high level of distrust for that kind of way, are they going to be more compelled to go for a Simeone?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, if obviously the follow-up night happened, I was thinking, you know what, if he stays another couple of years and Koeman does a good job at Everton, he could fit the bill. He's got that kind of dirty side to him. He's going to call you out if you annoy him or you don't do your job. Look at what he's done with Barkley, who's a golden boy of Goodison Park. He doesn't care who you are. But then he can play nice football.
Yeah.
I think it's a good show.
It's so hard to know who to pick. And the thing is, Wenger's going to be involved. And I don't... It's a bit like your ex-wife picking your new wife.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the best idea.
And also the whole structural elements there as well, which is that, you know, he very much runs that football club as himself. Someone else comes in, there begins to be, you know, holes, people take the opportunity for empire building, all of that sort of stuff. It's a massive leap into the unknown.
I mean, I've said to you guys before, we need a David Dean type figure in there. You have to bring in a man to deal with the business side of things because it's bogged him down and he's taken his ass to the ball because of that.
What isn't leap into the unknown is Sutton away on Monday. You know what you're going to get. They're going to be in your face. They're going to try and sit deep. They're going to try and win the headers. They're going to try and win the headers in both boxes. But it really, I mean, I actually can't conceive of an Arsenal defeat here. I know that's dangerous language. I know it's dangerous language.
We can say that, you can't.
We can say it, you can't. But there is, you know, for instance, now there isn't even the idea of there being another game coming up hot off the heels because your game against Southampton the following weekend's being postponed. The one thing that, you know, that Wenger won't want is any sort of concept of a replay. It's Monday and then there's a big break until you actually come to Anfield. It's going to be...
Yeah.
You've just got to think that gets boxed off one way or the other.
Part of me thinks, play the second team.
Yeah.
Just literally, especially after the way some of the players played last night, play the second team and just show the fans that you're hearing what they're saying. And, you know, there's enough talented youngsters there, we should still win. Can't contemplate anything. Well, yeah, you know, it's not about playing your Ozils, and Sanchez has gone wherever he's gone. He's been given time off. It's not about playing them players. Rest them up and let's finish as high as we can in the league. You know, we are far off Chelsea, but if Tottenham is still in the race, then so are we. You know, all this kind of, oh, Tottenham are in the race, but Arsenal aren't. Load of poo.
Well, Spurs still haven't finished above Arsenal in quite some time. I can say that.
In my lifetime. Yeah. I'm 36 this year.
Wow. So yeah, I mean,
do it for Natasha.
There's a part of me that thinks that making the likes of Mesut Ozil play at Sutton is actually a better punishment than leaving him out.
No, because them 3G pitches are a nightmare. All you need is someone to do their knee or their cruciate, and their season's over. And I'll be honest with you, I'd rather not risk him.
No, that's a fair point, I suppose.
Give me a prediction then. Sutton versus Arsenal.
3-1 Arsenal.
3-1 Arsenal. Excellent stuff. Always good to speak to Natasha. We'll speak to her again in the next coming weeks and months as we got our eye on Arsenal, who almost certainly will find a way to finish top four despite all of this, because that's what they do. Yeah. Great to speak to her. Me and Mo are going to have a chat about the rest of the games right now. Mo, you go through these cup games and there is the one for me that stands out as the one where there really could be a surprise, is Huddersfield versus Manchester City. That's the one. The reason why it stands out for me is Huddersfield, they're playing good stuff, the way they are in the league deservedly, but also they play quite an aggressive game. They know how to play in and out of possession. We know the manager's got the relationship with Klopp and all that sort of stuff. But also City are understandably going to make changes. They've got a European game next week. It's, for some reason, it's been kept as a 3 p.m. Saturday, where the other ones have been moved for television. And that all makes a little bit of sense. But if I was looking through all of these and looking at the shocks, they're actually 2 3 p.m.s. I'm looking at Middlesbrough, Oxford, and Huddersfield, Manchester City, and they're the ones I'm looking at going, I can see a surprise in those two.
I can definitely see a surprise in those two. I'd almost add Fulham Spurs into it as well, simply because Spurs have got so much bigger fish to fry. Fulham are on a good run of form. I think it's interesting, though, whether you see why they're on the TV. I mean, is it that they're really after a shock, or is it that they're just after the team that's going to bring them the most ratings?
Yes.
That's why Man United have been on for every cup game for the last 5 years.
Lots of people support Manchester United.
Exactly. I think with Huddersfield, it's a tricky one, simply because I have a sneaky suspicion that they might make a few changes.
Yeah, you could be right. They are still only 4 points. They've got a game on Tuesday night against Reading, which they'll want to win.
It's a big game.
They're only 4 points behind Brighton still, so there's the idea that you can look at each other and say, we're still in. They've managed to hang on in there to look at the top two, look at the automatic place. And, you know, there is a 10-point gap between them and seventh on the other hand, so they could make a bit of a call. But
I think that in terms of going, if it wasn't such a crunch game against Reading on Tuesday, I'd say, yeah, he's going to keep them rolling. He's definitely going to look at momentum rather than saving people at this stage of the season. That's the only issue. However, if they only make two or three changes, I still believe that they've got enough quality to cause City problems. Because, I mean, this is the thing. We talk about City making changes. Do you really know who their best defence is?
No.
And we're in February. So whoever they put in at the back there, there's going to be a chance for them.
Definitely going to be a chance for them. The other thing that you pointed out to me, and what we were edging on talking about when we were talking to George earlier on, is these numbers of, basically there's five of the top six in the Premier League, they're all in the fifth round of the cup, and then it's just like a trapdoor's been pulled for everybody else. You know, there's one or two left standing in there. Leicester are still in it. Burnley have hung on. You know, it's not an absolute disaster. But they're the only exceptions, really. And Middlesbrough, they're the ones who've hung on. Everyone else, they've gone. You're looking at the top end of the Championship. There's no Brighton. There's no Newcastle. No. They're both having excellent seasons. Sides full of really good sides. Reading are gone. Leeds are gone. You know, you just sort of list right the way through here. Sheffield Wednesday are gone. Norwich are gone. And then you get to Fulham. And it is this, you know, when we talk about the big teams are the ones who always get the criticism. It's happened to Klopp when we've gone out this season.
Definitely.
They get the criticism, but you're actually looking at all these other sides, and they'd be making the chopping and the changing around the cup games as well.
Leeds made 10 changes when they went out. And it's strange because, I was looking at this and going back through the years when the last time a team that got promoted into the Premier League also got to the quarterfinals of the cup at the same time, it's been over 12 years. So it always gets to that point of the crunch, because people talk about now about how it's a modern thing to rest players and what have you. It's been going on for quite some time here, that when it gets to the crunch, the prize of the Premier League is so big that the teams at the top of the Championship are like, it doesn't matter.
And also they've got 46 games.
Yeah.
They're playing all these Tuesday night games. You're right to point that out. You point that out repeatedly throughout these shows, that they're about to go and play on a Tuesday. Right the way up down the divisions, and it's not made easy for them. I mean, it's not made easy for them all season, is the point. All season they have this Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Friday, Wednesday, some occasional Sunday game thrown at the Championship and League One, League Two. But it isn't as though the Championship are looking after their brand in inverted commas and saying, we'll give you the game after the fourth round, the week after the fourth round of the cup off, or the week after the fifth round of the cup off. They're saying, You get your boots back on. You're playing in what feels like 20 minutes.
Definitely. And I think when it comes to the lower end of the Premier League, they will all convincingly say to themselves, well, obviously the Premier League is more important. Going down is such a big drama that everything else becomes... And when it comes to the crunch end of the season, they'll expect the fans to be able to agree with them and say, okay, look, a crap problem would be great, but let's secure the bread and butter here. But when we're in a situation where the league's getting more money than it has ever before, we're reaching more countries than they have done before, players are coming in from all angles, are we really saying that they can't handle that many games a season? Because the Championship, guys, by the time it gets to this stage of the season, like I was saying before to George about Oxford, it becomes a bit of momentum. You get used to playing, so it maybe makes it a bit easier. I just think that a lot of the time, the clubs are too unwilling to take a risk.
Well, that's why Man United are interested in this season, because I spoke to Steve Armstrong on the show last week, and Steve was saying one of the things that grabs him, you know, is that he thinks that you just get into a rhythm at this stage. If you're a good side, you'll just get into a rhythm. Definitely. And you just know where you are. And yeah, there'll be, you know, you'll probably have a core seven who play every game, and there'll be four that you chop and change in and out. Maybe one of your fullbacks, one of your wide forwards. Yep. You might have a little look at Ibrahimovic if you're United, and you might look after Pogba. You might look after Carrick. And everyone else, they might just have the attitude now of go, well, you know what? This is what it is. It's going to be a cup game, and then it's Europa League game, then they've got the League Cup final. You know, there's the next few for United are, effectively, the next few are, they go Blackburn away, then it's San Etienne away, then they find themselves up against Southampton, then they've got San Etienne at home. That this is, well, you can say rest for the cups, but if you're resting for the cups, you've just got cup game, and then they're back again on that Saturday against Bournemouth. But that's how this is going to go, I think. I think that, and they'll get into that rhythm. Now, it might go for them, it might not, because that'll come down to the footballers, but I don't think he's going to be making wholesale changes, Mourinho.
No, I don't. And I think it was noticeable that he'd already made a few noises about fixtures, as if to say, this is going to be a problem for us if we do well. We're going to be punished for doing well. But I think that's more a nod to the league to change the fixtures than it is of him saying that we're going to have to make changes. I think back to all of the teams of recent past who have gone on a good run to win the league. I mean, like Leicester last year. I mean, the Manchester City side, the first one they won it. And by this time of the season, you could predict the substitutions. You knew who was coming on for whom. And like you say, it's a core group of maybe 13 or 14 players who are going to be used in all situations. And that's because they've got their game down to a T. They know what works. It's like going back to the Man City team. When Yaya Toure would go from the deeper midfield up to further up the pitch, he would always do it towards the end of the game, regardless of where the score was, because it would give them that little bit of extra difference. And between the two styles, you could see that they had it coming. And this is the same with Chelsea this year, with Fabregas.
Yeah.
When they've got Matic and Kante together, when they're strong, when they're solid, later on in the game, if they need a bit of creativity, Fabregas comes in.
And if they're ahead, he comes on for one of Pedro and Hazard. And,
exactly. And
everyone sort of calms down into the 15 players that are going to do the business for us. We know who the 15 are. It might not be the same 15 starting every week, but we know now, by this point of the season, a manager's got his list. These are the boys that I rely on.
100%. And so when you come into situations where you start to worry about rest, arguably, the fixture congestion that we had in January, that's actually a lot more disruptive than if you would have it in March, because you're a lot better into your football by the time it comes to March. And so I think it can become a little bit of chasing your tail. It's almost like if you believe, oh, we're going to be tired, then we have to rest it. Then you are getting tired. If you're winning games, you're thinking, yeah, we can beat anyone. Let's bring on the next one. Like, again, going back to past years, 2001 treble season.
Well, the interesting thing about 2001 treble season, actually, now that you mentioned it, someone mentioned to me today that Liverpool actually only have 15 players who play 30 or more games that season. And you forget that, for instance, Heskey plays this number of games. Schmitzer plays about 45, 50 that season. Like that, how many appearances he gets on and off the bench. And this is part of the point. Daily Blind at the minute, at Man United, for instance, he'll end this season with over 30, 35 games where he's come occasionally off the bench, but for instance, starts last week from nowhere. Everyone's a bit surprised. But then he'll be one of the trusted 15, 16 for United. But what won't happen is there'll be 15 lads who'll get their 30 plus, but everyone else will be not knocking around the fives, the tens, 15 max. And there'll be that drop-off that will happen. And I say that treble season's an interesting one for that, because what happens is that, you know, every week Hulé suddenly, he's not picking Owen every game.
No.
Sometimes it's Fowler and Heskey. Sometimes it's Owen and Heskey. Sometimes it's Fowler and Owen. And then Yari Littman gets lashed in as well. But those three, predominantly two of them, are playing every game.
Yeah, exactly.
And they get their appearances. And then what happens? They get used to each other, because you play till 70, you get subbed, the other lad's coming in, and everyone's used to him. So there isn't this unlikely drop-off.
Yeah.
That's the Fabregas thing at the minute. He's getting time on the pitch all the time, but he's not getting his starts.
No, and I think the fact that Conte can say to him, look, you're not starting every game, but you are an important part of our plan, I think that's good enough, because you get into a situation a lot of time. I think Aguero is the latest one, where it's like the minute that they're not the first choice, then obviously they're going to have to leave. It's like you can't have a big squad of all happy people who aren't all going to play at the same time. It's like you can want to have your cake and eat it sometimes. And I feel like a lot of the time it's down to the manager and how he sells the project, so to speak, to them. If he can say to them, look, just because you're not starting doesn't mean you're not important. And that doesn't mean say, oh yeah, you're just going to start every cup game. That means that when I need something, then you're there for me. Kind of like we were hoping to get out of Daniel Sturridge while Sadio Mane was away, but it didn't quite work out that way.
Okay, huge thank you to Mo, as ever, Natasha George and Richard Hobbs for coming in and being part of this slightly different little Friday show for us. Let's see how all the cup games unfold this weekend. It's actually quite nice to have a weekend off. We just don't get to go to La Manga.